Welcome to the Look for the Learning podcast, where leadership meets life and every story has a lesson. I'm your host, Artrell Williams. This isn't just another leadership podcast. It's a conversation space for the curious, a place where we unpack how leaders are shaped, not only by boardrooms and books, but by their hobbies, interests, histories, side quests, and stumbles. Each episode, I sit down with people who lead in their own zones of genius, whether they're talent developers, team captains, parents, musicians, entrepreneurs, or mentors. Together, we explore the moments that changed how they think, how they show up, and how they lead. Here, we believe leadership is personal, and learning, that happens everywhere. In triumphs, in failures, in traffic, at practice, and in the quiet moments that nobody sees. So if you lead others, or simply want to lead yourself a little better, you're in the right place. Let's look for the learning, and we'll see where it takes us. Today, I have the pleasure of sitting with Beth Slazek, who is an experienced educator, creativity specialist, and organizational leader who brings a unique blend of structure and spontaneity to her work. You've got quite the resume, Beth, and I can't wait to dig into having you share some of these experiences that we have, because there's some really cool stuff that I know about you that I wanted to share with our listeners today. One of the intriguing things that I see here that I didn't know about you is that you taught applied improv for quite some time.
That's one of my favorites.
I'm glad. You know my affinity for comedy in general, all things comedic. And even though improv can be used for other reasons too, I'm sure you use it a lot in your leadership, in the way that you lead people, the way that you engage your classrooms, the way that you probably even speak to your family members, right? So at some point, we'll also take a look at the lens of improv that you sometimes view leadership through. But that really, really exciting thing that I really wanted to share with our listeners is the fact that you have flown a plane, and you're not a pilot by profession, but you have flown a plane. And I feel like that's a unique experience that many others will be able to benefit from. And I'll start by asking you, what took you to the point where you decided that you would fly a plane?
Oh, you're going to love this, because I think it's my yes and mindset is how I ended up doing that. And we were on vacation. My husband and one of our good friends, we went traveling through Maine. And my husband is a shy extrovert. So a lot of people, if you haven't vacationed with him, you don't know that he is game for anything. And we were driving to our Airbnb and I saw a billboard that said that you could take aerial tours of Maine. Heck yeah, that sounds like a freaking delight. And I'm like, do you want to do it? So we looked up and he's like, yeah, book it. So we showed up and the pilot said, who's the most likely to get airsick? And my husband and my friend like got whiplash looking at me so fast. And I'm like, yeah, that's probably fair. I'm that type. So he's like, okay, you're going to sit in the front seat. And then Steve, my husband, and our friend Bob sat in the back. And so we get into, and it's, now you know, it seats four people. So it was a giant plane. But he's like, have your phone out. Like, you guys are going to be wanting taking pictures. You guys are going to be wanting recording. And I'm like, this is so cool. And that, yes, and I am so game for any, okay. Life is a smorgasbord and we should be professional eaters. That is my view. And this is one of those, I wanted to taste what just being in an airplane was. And so we go up and he's showing us all this stuff. And he's like, hey, you know, so this is how you go, you know, up and this is how you go down and stuff like that. At that point, I had my phone just like resting on my leg because I'd taken a lot of pictures and video. And he's like, you got it? And I'm like, oh yeah, sure. And he let's go of all of the steering plane device things. and says, okay, you're good. I'm going to record you flying now. And I'm like, oh, I'm definitely prepared for this. And not white knuckling terrified. If you met 10 people who've known me forever, they're like, that's crazy. She'll do. She's a wild, crazy adventurer. Turns out when I am up in the air, I become very, very unexciting. And I'm like, I need to keep going straight. I need this. We are going to keep going forward, straight, same speed, not die. That was my goal that no one died. And for the record, I am one for one. No one has died on my flight. But that's how I ended up flying a plane. Definitely on purpose and totally knew it was happening and had prepared for that mentally and physically at all.
And so you've got a 100% success rate with that.
That's what I take it as.
You're batting 1,000 when it comes to flying planes. But what I've heard is that flying the plane isn't the biggest deal. It's landing the plane that everybody's concerned about. But what we need you to be able to do is land that bad boy, right?
I don't have my Sully powers yet, and I have not had to land a plane. The pilot landed the plane, but I kept us up the entire 10 minutes that I was in charge.
So it wasn't one of those situations where you decided that you were going to live out this bucket list item of flying a plane, and then you took classes and you had to wake up every Saturday morning and do all of these things to get up there. This was a really impromptu situation that you faced, and you had to make a decision. And you mentioned some of your personality components that brought you to that decision. I know that that time wasn't the first time where you had to do something spontaneous, or you decided to do something spontaneous and had enough confidence in your own skills and abilities, and probably some trust in the person who said you could do it. Because obviously, if he'd flown on many occasions and he trusted that you could do it, that's the only way he'd turn over the quote unquote wheel to allow somebody else to do it. So there was some leadership demonstrated on the pilot's part as well in understanding that and then guiding you through that process of that 10-minute flight that you had as not being a pilot, but now you have flying a plane on your resume.
Not a pilot, but I've played one on TV. Oh, that's an old person's joke. I don't know if anybody listening is.
I get it, though.
For all you Gen Xers, you're welcome.
So how does this relate to your professional life? There's a few things that I want to unpack as we talk about that experience. You, in your professional life, do a lot of training and facilitating creatively. Let's talk a little bit about that journey. Tell us what you do professionally.
So I work for a nonprofit. I'm the vice president at Curiosity to Create. And we help. Okay, so our whole goal is we think we should work to provide children who are fantastic citizens, that they can think critically, they can solve problems creatively, they can try things that they're not comfortable with, they can work in teams. And so the method that we have gone for is, if this is the end product we want, let's start when they're short, get them early on. So we're working with educators so that they can be teaching children to do critical thinking, creative problem solving, teaming, and things like that. So we help teachers add those kinds of learning aspects into existing curriculum, because teachers usually don't have the choice of their curriculum. Those are all, you know, if you didn't know, now you know. Districts usually purchase those curriculum and that's what you use, which is, you know, you go back and you remember your textbook, and your teacher had the teacher's version and things like that. So we're helping teachers go from less teacher teaching, which sounds good, but what we really want is students learning. And that's different. So we're working with teachers to make it so that the students are learning more. So all of that adult education things for P people who are educators is what we do.
Now, you mentioned that you try things that they're uncomfortable with. You want them to open their minds to do things that they're uncomfortable with. And that situation that you told us about in the beginning with you flying a plane, you
example A.
Right. You thought that you were comfortable enough. He said, you want to do it? You're like, yes, because there's life experiences that have taught you certain things about your ability to perform. Then you notice that there was a shift in the way that you saw the world, probably figuratively and literally, because now you're way up in the sky looking down over everything. It couldn't have been a comfortable position because you've never really been in that position before. And you changed a little bit. You weren't the same Beth for a little while. Tell us about that, dealing with discomfort.
When you were doing the intro and you were talking about like using failure, and, you know, we're familiar with fail forward. And it's funny that the improv comes up. The improv comes up in everything, because if you somehow have managed to get the script for life and you are hogging that, would you please share it? Because the rest of us are just stumbling through best we can blindly. And so often that results in failure, and people are like, oh no, I failed. I can't go on. You learn so much more. If you do it right the first time, that could just be happenstance. But if you don't do it well, or if something goes wrong, you're glaringly made aware of that and can then course correct. And on some level, we know this is true. If you're watching a baby learning how to walk, they fall. They're notorious for falling. I mean, diapers are a little soft, and I bet that's the reason why. And we applaud that, because that's how they learned to walk. And yet we're like super judgy of ourselves. Like, I did poorly at public speaking. I can never do it again. No, come on. You know, regroup and try it again. So while, again, to reiterate, my first flight was successful because everybody lived, it's you get to like, flying has instant feedback. Instant feedback. If you push a little too hard or pull a little too hard. I had my first car was an 81 Chevette. Bless, I loved my Chevette, but it had what we call loose steering. And you're like, what? You would be turning the steering wheel a little bit before the wheel started turning. Planes are not like that. They're instant. The eyelash distance of a move, and you're going to feel it. So you get that. My goal had become instantly straight. Just go forward, no higher, no lower, and you can feel it. So that instant feedback, out of nerves, I'm pulling a little or pushing a little, the plane is reacting instantly, and I knew that. I wanted smooth. And I think that's, you know, so important for us to understand is, one, feedback is valuable, and we probably need to learn how to give and receive feedback better, but also that failure isn't the end of the world. It is the lesson along the way. Because I know for certain, if I had pulled and pushed whichever, I can't remember now. I don't know. Maybe I blocked it out. And we started to nosedive. You know, the pilot would have dropped my phone faster than you can even think, and had rightened us, pulled back up, down, straight. He would have saved our lives.
Yeah. And we all know the importance of trust when it comes to leadership. He obviously trusted the situation. He trusted you enough to turn it over to you. You also trusted that he wasn't going to allow something bad to happen while you guys are up in the sky. So there's this component of trust that you have to have in this leadership conversation. And that was something that you experienced on this journey, huh?
Trust, I think, is the basis of all communication. You know, I had to trust that the information he told me was correct, and that he would not let us crash. And I think anytime there is a communication situation, which is almost every situation, that being trustworthy and being confident enough to trust the other person, like, that's a game changer. You know, you've been in leadership situations where there has not been trust. And then it's not leadership, it's management. You know, leaders inspire, managers tell you what to do. And that if there's no trust, you are not inspiring anyone. You are not, you know, especially in a learning environment, if there's not trust, learning, especially as adults, doing those things is scarier. If you're learning something new, which means you're living in a land of newness, that is very scary. And if you don't have the trust that it's okay to flub a little as you're learning so that you can learn, you know, develop a mastery of it, and that the information is being given to you in a generous spirit and not a judgmental spirit. And trust is, I don't know, trust I think might be the number one thing, just in general. Being trustworthy and trusting others, it's a game changer for any kind of change, which learning is a change. It's a change in your understanding.
Yeah. And there's a whole lot that I took away from what you just mentioned. One of the things that keeps us from doing things that we're not comfortable with is often fear. Mm-hmm. And what seems to be an enemy of fear is trust. If you trust the situation, then you're not afraid. And that applies whether we're flying planes or if we're leading organizations. And you mentioned that leaders inspire, managers tell us what to do. And so often we have these people who just tell us what to do. They make no attempt to inspire. When there's fear involved, sometimes they even try to use the fear to motivate, knowing that that's not necessarily the best way to approach it. And maybe they don't know. If they're listening, hopefully they'll take that away from this conversation, that by using fear as a motivation tactic, you're not doing yourself or the individuals any service. So leaders inspire, managers tell us what to do. And you said trust is the basis of communication. I've learned something already.
Hey, I mean, think of those, the best leaders you had, the ones that got the most out of you. It was because they had trust in you. They would give you an assignment. Maybe it was required a little growth on your part. That shows that they trusted you. And the times where you've worked with people that it's, you know, you're working on a project and it's magic, it's because you're trusting that everybody's doing their part and everybody is doing, showing the best intent. You know, when you've got relationships, you can get like trash talk and goof around. But if there's not trust, then it's not fun. It's hurt. And that doesn't get the best out of everybody. Nobody leaves an activity or a meeting and with hurt feelings, thinking that they've also done their best.
Right. You mentioned the two-way relationship, that as the leader, we want to trust the people who are following just as much as the people who are following need to trust the leader. So there's that relationship that they both have. And I can imagine being up in the sky for the first time. There's a whole lot of fear and trust, and eventually some other things happen, right? So tell me what happened after you started to settle into the fact that I'm up here flying a plane.
Well, you know who I literally just thought of was my husband and my friend Bob, who were sitting in the back seat watching this happen, also not expecting me to be flying. And the level of trust, because, yeah, the pilot has a level of confidence. You know, he knows what he's doing and he knows he can take over at any second. I'm like, okay, he thinks I could do this, so I guess I can do it. But the two of them back there have no say in what's going on. And they just have to be like, I trust that Beth will keep us alive. I have trust, blind trust in both me and the pilot. I mean, Steve and Bob at least have like a history of knowledge. Steve and I have been together for 20 years, but also that means Steve has seen me do some pretty kookaloo things. So that may or may not have been a trustworthy thing, but you know, sitting there just there having to have blind trust in what I'm doing, the choices I'm making, the fact that I'm not going to like suddenly nosedive down into the ocean, you know, that's, they just have to kind of go with that. And I like to think that all of my interactions with these two people over time have led them to believe that they would be fine with me flying and not shaking the steering wheel.
But that also says a lot. And that brings me to another point as I'm learning from this conversation that we're having, is that when you have someone who trusts you that much, you're the leader, and you know that these people trust you, the pilot is trusting you, and the pilot has more experience doing this than you do, but then you also have passengers who trust you. They have given you full confidence that you can be the one to guide them through this experience. So I'm sure that also gave you a sense of responsibility not to goof off too much. So when you talk about that Beth turning into a different Beth when she started flying a plane, I can imagine that as you were adapting to this new level of responsibility that you've been given and making sure that you wanted to lead them the right way. Tell me a little bit about that.
Yeah, you know, while you're talking, I was thinking, you know, yeah, wanting to do the best for all of our lives and that trust. And it's interesting. I think a leadership metaphor we can take from that situation is I was not the most prepared or accomplished person in that room to do that. I was not the best choice, but that pilot was giving me an opportunity so that I could have an experience. And when we're in situations, there are so many times, I think, in leadership where, yes, you know, you could definitely do that better, easier, or faster. But is this also an opportunity for somebody else to learn, to grow, and an opportunity for other people to watch them learn and grow? I think we forget a lot of the value of leadership isn't necessarily seeing the person who is the most accomplished and can do it the easiest, but seeing other people who, you know, quote, are more like us, you know, inexperienced pilots, and like watching them grow through that and practicing having faith and trust in somebody else to lead you well. And being happy. Oh, and being happy for you to do that.
You just mentioned practicing trust. And it's ruminating right now. It's just all bouncing around in this big bald skull of mine. We have to practice trust. Many leaders think that you're just supposed to get trust because you have the title. I'm your supervisor. I'm your manager. I'm your VP or whatever. You should trust me for that reason. We have to give them
like, I deserve it. I deserve it. But, you know, trust is not a deserve quality. It's an earn quality. And, you know, it goes both ways, like practicing. Yeah, I think we need to practice trusting people. Are we going to be disappointed sometimes? Probably. That doesn't mean we give up. Keep practicing trust. More people will get better at it. Trusting and being trustworthy. You know, that's it. My least favorite phrase is two sides of the same coin, but it's also true. Having that, being a leader who is trustworthy and as a leader practicing trust and allowing other people to practice trust. And even, honestly, just asking for it. Will you please trust me for this? Yeah. And so much, I think, like that trust also, it's such a partner with communication. And I am a complete little side note is I am the world's biggest murder mystery fan. I love the genre of cozy murder mysteries. Is it set at a in a small English village? I am here for it. Does the person own a knitting store or a bakery or a library or a bookshop? Any of those, perfect thing. And what I know from watching, reading, listening is most of those due to a failure of communication. So communication is so vital. And I will tell you, when I was flying, like keeping your inner voice as an outer voice the entire time is very good for that. I'm nervous. Is this going okay? Should I pull up? You know, keeping that running train of thought back and forth between the actual pilot and the pilot of the day helped keep our plane much more steady. And just in general, trust is easier found when it's been, when everything going on is well communicated. So it's not just trust me on this. It's so I've thought about this and this and this, and I've tried this and this and this. And because of that, I am going this way. Please trust that. It's easier to trust because you know that it wasn't a whim.
You mentioned the inner voice and then knowing what to do with that inner voice. What was your inner voice while you were up there flying the plane? And how did you realize that you needed to do something about that inner voice?
So full disclosure, if you haven't picked up on this, I am definitely a chatterbox. And keeping my inner voice inside my head is harder than putting it outside my head. But this is one time where I saw like the payoff was real, because that open communication, him not having to guess what I was thinking. Guessing what somebody is thinking in a leadership or a high risk situation, it's not good. You shouldn't be guessing. So the two of us, like just talking back and forth the whole time, helped waylay my fears. I assume it probably waylaid Steve and Bob's fears. I'm like, oh no, though, good. That's good. He's telling her the right things. And it gave him, you know, it circled back to feedback. It's giving the feedback of, you know, you should pull up a little, you know, little course correction tweaks. And I think that's true for so many things, is please, listeners, forgive me. I do not mean this to be offensive, but Disney might have done us wrong in that, you know, like, oh, my true love will just know. No, they won't. And that goes for any relationship you're in, coworker to coworker, leader to mentee, things like that. Like, this is what I'm seeing. Oh, this is a great thing to Google, empathy maps, where you can write it out. This is what I'm seeing. This is what I'm hearing. This is what I'm thinking. This is what I'm saying. Anytime that you can be sharing that information, it takes the guesswork out of what else is going on. So it brings people in to at least the process of how things happen. So it feels that they're a part of the decision, not that it was decided on them.
Yeah. And that level of empathy is needed, especially when we're trying to guide people through uncertain situations, uncertain times, uncertain processes. Whenever there's uncertainty, there's this opportunity for the leader to know that others may feel uncertain too. And I think I'm as guilty as the next, that if I jump into an uncertain situation, because many of them are comfortable to me, that's kind of who I am, as I run towards some of those uncomfortable situations. But that doesn't mean that others are as open to do so. And I even found that out in a very practical way in my last job, where I understood what was going on and we were having some organizational changes. So I'm like, okay, cool. Changes are going to happen. Let's go. Let's deal with it. And I really had to take a step back and acknowledge that even though I was ready to deal with it, that didn't mean that everybody else was.
Yeah. And there's so many times where information is not uniform. So comfort level then is not uniform. And the more you can share more information, you know, I have three kids. And when they were little, like, there's obviously things that I understood much deeper. And they're, you know, go put your shoes on. Like, well, so you need to have your shoes on because we are going to be going someplace and you're going to have to get out of the car. And it is against the law to go into certain places without shoes. This is information that I know, but it's not necessarily information that they knew at that point. And it's just so true. The more leadershipy your leadership is, the more things that you might be privy to that everyone isn't. And so a level of understanding helps get more buy-in, more understanding, more shared experience, which goes to build trust.
Now, what you described there was perspectives.
Yeah.
And we've got very different perspectives that are happening throughout the organization. The frontline perspective is going to be much different than the CEO perspective. And I guess it's really worth making sure that we acknowledge that, because there are going to be certain situations. Often the frontline employees said, oh, they sit up in offices and they don't understand what we go through. And then the C-suite people, sometimes they don't understand why the frontline employees just don't get it. Right? How can you not know that you're supposed to come to work?
Well, and there's even like sometimes not all information can be shared, but you can like allude, inform of that. There are some things here that you are not privy to. And that's when you have to rely on the trust. But if you share that, then they can trust you.
Which goes back to one of the points that I had taken from what you said earlier. Trust is a partner of communication. Communication is a partner of trust. So we have to make sure that we acknowledge that and use that in a leadership way. Yeah. Use that in a leadership way. These perspectives, I'm still fascinated by the fact that you were up in the sky looking over the earth. And you had to have seen some things and probably even gained a different perspective, not necessarily the literal perspective there. But as you got to the point where you started to settle into the fact that, holy crap, this is happening, I'm flying a plane. What's your mindset at that point? What's your perspective on this experience as you are up there and now everything is okay?
So I think the first thing that you notice when you're up there is just how beautiful everything is. It is when you change your perspective anyway, including going up in a plane, that different perspective allows you to see the beauty that you weren't privy to previously. You change your perspective, you get an opportunity to see things in a way, and I always choose to appreciate differences as a beauty difference. You're like, wow, you know, this was Maine, so it was oceans and islands and craggy rock things with trees in it. One perspective change, or I don't know, change is the right, but perspective shift for me is for my job, I am in an airplane a lot, in a different place. Back, it's a big plane and I'm sitting in an aisle seat, ideally, but understanding the faith and trust that I have now placed on, you know, a different team, you know, pilot, co-pilot, and maybe the flight crews, that change in perspective, having been a little bit, I mean, obviously not the same level, but like been in the front now, my normal position is more in the back. I guess putting my faith as a little more understanding. Now my faith and trust is based a little bit more on knowledge. And I think in leadership, like the takeaway for leadership, that is like our positions and perspectives change. You may be a leader in this side area or scope or situation, but you are a team member and in a different situation, or, you know, you're of a leadership team, and using that perspective of when I'm a leader, how I enjoy my group working together, am I being that kind of person now that I'm in a non-leadership or a different type of position? I don't know if that answered your question.
It gave me quite a bit of insight there. One of the things that stood out to me from the very beginning of that piece about perspectives is that when you're looking at the earth in your situation, you were looking over all of it, the big picture, and you said it was beautiful. When we come down to earth, we can look around us and it's beautiful. You look up in the sky from the earth, different perspective, there's still beauty in that. And the more we drill down, doesn't necessarily mean that we're losing the beauty. It's just from that different physical perspective from what we're talking about. And it even made me think about when my kids were really, really young. Because as an adult at my age, I don't want to get down on the floor. I mean, that's just a thing.
The floor is so far away now.
I really don't want to end up down there for whatever reason. And then it takes a while to get back up when we do. But I remember getting down on the floor with the kids. And I'm like, wow, this looks way different when you're up close. You know what? That marble may be delicious, right?
Yeah. Like maybe this time I could eat it. No, don't.
But we should be able to appreciate that beauty from the various perspectives, knowing that people who are in those perspectives, who see things from those perspectives, can still appreciate what they see and still enjoy the beauty that comes along with it, and just acknowledge that they are of a different perspective, that they may have a different perspective. We may not live in that bubble. We may not be in that world all the time. If we happen to go there sometimes, though, it may be scary if you haven't been there in a while. But ultimately, if you go there and you become comfortable there, it helps you relate to those that are there. And I'm now thinking about way more than just flying planes and eating marbles off.
I like the planes and marbles. That's summarized all of our conversations. Yeah, that in incorporating different perspectives, I think makes any project better, because different understandings should be incorporated into anything that you're doing. So, like, you know, you were talking about the back office and the front line and the difference in perspective. Having more understanding from different perspectives gets you a better picture. It gets you a deeper understanding. If I just knew what Maine looked like from the sky, I would have missed a lot of Maine. That's, you know, that doesn't give me a good picture of what Maine is. And having that chance to see Maine from the sky gives me a better perspective than when we're just driving around. You know, that change, incorporating as many different perspectives as possible, it gets you a better, more realistic view.
Right. So let's go back to being in the plane.
All right. We're back in the plane.
Looking over the beauty of Maine. You finally silence the voice in your head enough. You gain the trust that you need in yourself and in the situation. You trusted that someone has put faith in you that you would do a good enough job that everybody's going to get out of this unscathed. What happens next? What happens as you've gone through these stages of development here and now this is the normal? You're just coasting across the sky with people trusting you, and you're actually doing this. What's going on in the mind?
In reality, like it becomes exciting. You're like, wow, I am doing this. And I think appreciating where you are and what you're doing in the moment, you know, as a lifelong Billy Joel listener, the good old days weren't always so good. Tomorrow's not as bad as it seems. Like, we think a lot of like the past and, oh, this project was great, this leader was amazing, but appreciating the experience while you're experiencing it is so a really good way to live your life. And you don't miss things. And I, you know, once I had inhaled and exhaled a couple times, did my box breathing or whatever, letting the thrill set in, letting that moment of realizing not only was I doing it, but I could do it. We were fine. We were safe. Everything was going to be good. So isn't this amazing? Isn't this a once in a lifetime fantastic experience? This is really, really cool. And then all of a sudden time, once you're enjoying it, it goes too fast.
That makes me think of some of the things that I've been going through in my own personal spiritual journey, and hearing some of the talk about being present, how we think so often that time flies, but there are those times where when we actually take a pause and we just sit here, because if you and I just sat here for 30 seconds silently and appreciated what was happening in the moment, everybody else would stop listening and they would say, you know what? 30 minutes is a long time. Yeah. And there are times, even when we take a pause, if we break in our conversation, it may feel awkward a bit. You know this as a facilitator. And sometimes we ask a question, and if nobody starts to answer in the next 10 seconds, we're ready to chime in.
And it's so bad. That is so bad. I talk about that all the time when I'm doing like a train the trainer. Like, if you ask a question, call out that you are going to have a long, awkward pause, because I don't know, we want to fill the silence and that, oh, like, all right, does anybody have any questions? Okay, so now we're moving on. No! Allow the person to hear your, all right, are there any questions? To kind of like run through everything that you've gone, look for holes, and then, you know, craft those holes into a question and then say it out loud like that. That takes a bit. It's going to take a beat. So give it the long, awkward pause.
And our learners have become accustomed to us being disingenuous when we ask them if there are any questions. Yeah. They believe that we don't really mean it, because we just jump back into talking as soon as we say that without giving them the opportunity to even process what has been said. And it's a skill to learn how to just stop talking, be quiet, and sit and listen. But that eternally, that sense of eternity that we feel is enough time to allow them to be able to learn, to be able to process the information that we've given. So we shouldn't feel like bad things are happening if nobody's saying anything. Hopefully what we meant to communicate to them has come through, and they're just processing it. They're just thinking about it. Yeah.
I will say I do that almost every training session. I really try to do it every training session, but I know that I forget, because I forget a lot of things. Bless my heart. And this is 100% true. 100% of the time I say, I'm going to wait, and it is going to feel awkward, and you're going to have a question every single time. Every single time somebody has been like, well, yeah, actually, you know what? And then they give a question. And like that long, awkward pause that I have, it is, I bet you I have never gone a full minute. I have never gone one full minute without somebody coming up with a question.
Once they know that you mean it, that's the thing. They don't know that we mean it. We just say, any questions? Okay, then let's move on.
Yeah. It's the training equivalent of, how are you doing? Fine.
Right. Right.
Yeah. So, are there any questions and other lies?
So I love that point there about appreciating the moment. And you said appreciate it while you're experiencing it. Be present. Be mindful in that situation. And if we can sit there for a little while, we'll realize that life isn't as fast as we try to make it out to be. I used to think about how we would live for the weekend. And in some context, we would live for the every other weekend because you got paid every 2 weeks. So it's like, okay, you get paid. Now I've run out of money. It's Monday. I can't wait until next Friday again. So I've already asked my life to speed up by 2 weeks just so I can get to that next point that I'm going to feel fulfilled again. And then we wonder why time flies. Why did this year go by so fast? Well, you pretty much hit the fast forward button for 2 weeks at a time.
Yeah. You pushed it through in 26 chunks really fast. One of the things I like to do is like, remember that time that you interviewed me for the webcast? Wasn't that amazing? Because that's right now. I remember how awesome this is. I'm remembering it right now.
Yeah. And a great conversation that doesn't feel like it has gone on as long as it has. To you and I, at least, and hopefully to those that are listening, they also feel the same way, that it's been a good enough use of their time and that they're able to take something away from the conversation that they can use later on. Because when you sit and you think about what's around you at any given time, there's a lot that we can process. And that's really what Look for the Learning is all about, is taking the opportunity to see what's around us. And I hadn't even thought about this really is a presence podcast. It's about taking the opportunity to be present and see what lesson you may be able to take from those situations that you encounter. For you, in this conversation, it was flying a plane. We also talked about a few other things, but that was the main point. You flew a plane. And through that experience, you and I have talked about the role that improv plays in leading, trust, communication, responsibility, being present, perspectives, and empathy.
Yeah, if you were looking for one direct line in a conversation with me, that's on you.
Well, the line was that you were up doing something that you had never done before. How long ago was this?
2022, maybe?
So it's been around 3 years.
Oh, yeah, it has.
In 3 years since you've done that, when's the last time that you thought about the lessons in improv, leadership, trust, communication?
I think about those all the time.
Well, for the sake of people listening, say this is the first time.
First time. I've not thought about anything since then. Been very present in everything else I was doing.
But thing is, I see the world through this lens. And that's what we want to bring to the listeners in this podcast, is that there is so much. Each of these experiences is jammed, packed with lessons, if we're looking for them. And those lessons can hide in many different places. Mm-hmm. When you got out of the plane, you may not have thought about that this was about people trusting you so much that they allowed you to take control. You had full control over their lives at that moment. When we get on a plane, we trust that the pilot and everybody else is going to do what they're supposed to do or have done what they were supposed to have done in order to make this thing work. And then we don't even trust things that happen right in our own faces from time to time. We trust that this random person who we may never actually meet is going to get us from Buffalo to LA, and we don't ask any questions. So why don't we trust ourselves? Why don't we trust that we are going to wake up on time, or that we are going to survive this situation? You know, I think about some of the anxieties that I have when I get up on a comedy stage from time to time. Why is that such a big deal if I'm going to let some random person take me in the air like you and get me from one place to the next? We talked about fear and trust, and a lot of that stuff is up here. It's in our own minds. And if we can just get over our own fears about leadership and being led, that helps make it easier for everybody, the leaders, the followers, and those that are impacted by what we do. So as we start to wrap up this conversation, I'd love to know when it was time to pass the handlebars. I don't even know what you call the thing to fly a plane with, because I've never been up there before. What happens when you give the handlebars back to the pilot?
So it's the plane is set up that they both have their own set of, I don't know, joystick. It's kind of what it's like. But like, all of a sudden, you can feel that somebody else has that tension on it too. And that it's okay to let go. Somebody else is now holding on. You can feel like you can feel like they're, I don't know, like the grip or something that it's somebody else is holding on to, because it's not like it's switched that it goes one to the other. They're both live. But you can just feel that somebody else is also taking over the power in a good way.
But each of you did that during that experience. There was a point at which he handed it over to you, mm-hmm. and a point at which you handed it back over to him. And you gave up the control once you trusted that it was okay to do so.
Yeah.
It was probably
one thing, you could feel somebody else having that power.
It was a bigger thing for him to do, I'm sure, to turn it over to you than it was for you to turn it over to him. But from a leadership perspective, that's what we have to do sometimes. We've got to understand how and when to turn over the control. And I'm sure he always had some control. He always had a way that he could help recover. But had he not shown you that he was letting go, you may not have had the same experience, for sure. That if he appeared to still be holding on to the reins while you were doing it, you may not have taken it as seriously as you did.
Yeah.
You may have said, oh, whatever. You've been in those little cars before where both people are holding it. You're like, okay, if I let go, nothing's going to happen because this person already has it. But you knew that you were in full control when it was time, and you took that seriously. You accepted the responsibility that was placed upon you. And you may have even thought about that responsibility as you had people behind you whose lives depended on your actions.
Yeah, exactly.
As leaders, people's lives depend on our actions. It may not be as impactful as what you described in being in a plane, because sometimes the situations are dire. But when we are the manager of a situation at work, and someone woke up to allow you to lead them that day, and they trust that they're going to get a paycheck because they need that paycheck to feed their families or buy their cars or whatever they're going to do with it, that's a ton of responsibility that a lot of times we take for granted.
Yeah. And the amount of unintended control you have over things that you don't see the end of, you know, like if you're the leader and you're inspiring people to be their best, well, then they go home feeling like they've done their best and they are their best. And I think, you know, that kind of like raises the tide. But if you're the leader and you are not trustworthy and you're not inspiring trust and you're belittling, you know, you've had that person as a leader before and you go home cranky. And that just, you know, all of a sudden people are cutting you off when you're driving and the person at the grocery store is a jerk. Blah, 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 blah. Like that spirals down. So, you know, when I fly, you could see in obvious instant. And leadership isn't necessarily like that. You don't see, you know, we landed, we're all fine. Obvious outcome. Leadership, you don't necessarily see the positive impacts that you have on people whose positive impacts then impact on others. But that's still kind of on you. You know, if you can create, I just feel like the more we can create a positive atmosphere in general, let good communication and empathy and kindness be contagious. And as leaders, you have a lot of control over, to use my daughter's, you've got a lot of control of the vibe. Make it a good vibe.
I think that's a great lesson to leave this conversation at. I do want to find out if there's one last piece that you want to share with the listeners as I'm thinking, thank your pilot.
Thank your pilot.
Off the plane, thank your pilot. And I want to thank you. Before we wrap up this conversation, is there any message that you'd like to share about your experience as a leader, as someone who's flown a plane, that can help others in their leadership journey?
I think the only other last thing I would add is I was talking with a flight attendant about disturbance. And, you know, that's a big plane life. And she said that they understand, just like you've got rough roads, like right now, 20A is pretty rough. There's spots of air that are just rough and you just keep going through it and it's fine. And I think, you know, pilots understand that. Leaders need to understand that. If you're going through a rough period, just keep going. Keep going through it. If you're doing the right things, you'll get through that rough time.
Awesome. We started this conversation looking for the learning. And if you're anything like me, I'm guessing you found it. Whether it came from a story, a stumble, or a strategy, I hope something today sparked a new way to think, lead, or grow. If you want to keep the conversation going, visit www.lookforthelearning.com. You can subscribe to the blog, leave a comment, make a topic request, or even contribute your own lesson or story. We'd love to hear from you. Thanks for tuning in to Look for the Learning. Until next time, stay curious, stay grounded, and keep looking for the learning.